We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Brandon Kelly, the host of Blue Wire's new podcast, Golden Goal.
Messi takes everybody on. Messi has got it!
From Lionel Messi to Marta to Pele, our show takes a deep dive into soccer superstars.
2-0 and he's... What a World Cup for Megan Rapinoe!
From Zlatan Ibrahimovic's brash confidence with the play to back it up, to Megan Rapinoe's heroic outspokenness and World Cup flair, each episode examines a personality of the world's game. We'll dig into Maradona's Hand of God performance and subsequent downfall, the teenage trio at Dortmund that signaled the next generation of superstars, and that infamous headbutt that slung Zinedine Zidane from glory. Golden Goal, soccer stars and the moments that made them. Premiering this summer on Blue Wire.
Welcome to the RotoViz College Football Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, Stéphane Lacoe, joined by my co-host, Matt Wispay. This podcast is being brought to you by our friends over at Blue Wire, FFPC, and Bet Online. We are super excited to be back with you guys for another, just a little conversation about some college football, some fantasy football, and a lot of other nonsense. How you doing, Matt?
I am wonderful. It is, it's been a good week for, me getting to talk about football.
Yes, you were on the College to Canton podcast with our boy Travis May. I listened to the episode this morning. It is Monday while we were recording. I don't know what day you recorded it, but that was some good stuff there. I only had two problems with it, really, and that was one, the lack of conversation around my Oregon Ducks, but that's for good reason. They don't have receivers in the past anyway. And then Hunter Renfrow being left out of the discussion was super disappointing to me when you guys were talking about Clemson.
Well, I think I've made it pretty abundantly clear on this show. I don't like Hunter Renfrow. I don't think he's meaningful. And as for Oregon, get good.
Well, we'll get there. Both, that's foreshadowing in many ways. Both in this podcast, we'll talk a little bit about Oregon, but also in reality, we will get there. But yeah, what else has been going on football-wise for you guys?
So
not you guys, just you.
Just me? Oh, you missed Jordan. It's pretty clear. So, I mean, we had the big industry-wide Scott Fishbowl draft. Has been going on for the past week. Has it only been 7 days?
It's only been a week.
Feels like that's been going on for 7 years. So the Scott Fishbowl draft, which I wrapped up a couple of days ago, and I had a few, I had one of my Devy drafts this past weekend, which was a whole lot of fun.
Nice. I know you wanted to talk to me a little bit about it. Talk to me a little bit about it.
So this was my, so I did two dispersal drafts this offseason where I joined, and in one of them I went and I was like, screw it, I'm going to win now. And the other one, I was planning on doing that, but things didn't really break that way in the actual draft itself. So I decided to punt and go kind of full future, and ended up going into the draft with the second most Devy cash for, and had six spots. Midway through the draft, I traded away Kirk Cousins for a whole lot more money and four more spots. And well,
this must be super flex. Yes,
this is super flex. So to say that I came away with this with a bit of a haul would be an understatement. I'll start it off by just mentioning I got three QBs in this. So three future QBs, Sam Howell, who a lot of people see as a first round player in Devy drafts, Spencer Rattler, another guy who's in that same kind of range. Yep. Jaden Daniels, who is, you'll hear a little bit later about him.
Yeah, you like him.
I'm weighing in on Jaden Daniels. And then it's funny. I got in a few bidding wars, and first bidding war was Chris Olave. I spent more on
Shocker.
Him. I spent $81 on him for the three QBs that I told you I got. I spent $86 combined.
Oh my goodness.
So now that isn't to say like some of the wide receivers went stupid high. Like George Pickens went for like 280. Jamar Chase went for like 250, like stuff like that. So it's not a super ridiculously high price. I got David Bell, the wide receiver at Purdue, for 51. Right. I got Julian Fleming for $208.
Wow.
That was a friend of ours, you know, Steve Treble.
Yes.
He was the guy that also came in there with a ton of money. And well, actually, it wasn't him. I thought it was him, but it was not him. Well, another person in there went in there with a ton of money, and he thought he was going to outbid me on Fleming, but didn't realize that I had an absurd amount of money remaining. So I max bid him, which was he had exactly $208 left. So I set my max bid at $208. I got my boy Jackson Smith and Jigba for $1. Damon Demas, who is... some people are thinking he's going to be the next great receiver, for 25, Bijan Robinson for 41, and Devonta Smith for $52. So
that is all over the place.
This was the weirdest auction I've ever seen ever. Like when we looked at because this is a league that's split into two divisions, and in the other division, prices were fairly normalized. You had a couple of people sneak through, but Sam Howell went for like $180 in that one. So me stealing him for as cheap as I did, safe to say I am pretty happy about my future in this league, because it is a strong league that will be around for a while, so I don't have to worry about it just folding on me. And it is I'm kind of set with talent, as long as if 50% of these guys turn into high draft picks like they're all projected to, I'm in a really good spot.
Yes, you are. That's fun. I love Devy. It's such a shot in the dark sometimes. Like, you know, you can only do so much, and then a lot is going to end up depending on where these guys get drafted. But man, the process is so much fun. So that is lovely. How do you like your Scott Fishbowl team?
It's kind of weird because the guy who was drafting at the 101 was getting,
because
like
you and I were both at 102, right?
Yeah, so I was at the 102, and the guy who was sitting at 101 in my league, Ben Gretsch of CBS, formerly of RotoViz, was getting praise like crazy from people in the industry. So Peter Overzet and Pat Crane were basically like gushing over his team, and they were just like, I can't believe he got this person like two rounds after I had to get him. I can't believe, like, are the people in his league sitting there like drafting all kickers? And I'm just sitting there like, you know, I really like my team. And it was funny because Matt Spencer on Twitter put out his projections of like the best starting lineups. And I mean, I'm top 100 in that. So we'll see. I think it's good. I decided to go a little out of my comfort zone and I started with two quarterbacks. So we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah. I got a lot of players that I didn't have much exposure to. So I was also picking at the 102 and Mahomes went first. Again, this is super flex and quarterbacks get like, there's a weighted scoring system for good quarterbacks, like completions and incompletions or points and all that kind of stuff. So Mahomes went first. So I was tempted to go Lamar Jackson, but I just went with Christian McCaffrey because I just felt safe.
Even in this format last year, I think he was like the third highest scoring player overall. Yeah. So there's no harm in taking Christian McCaffrey.
But then in round two, I ended up going Kyler Murray and I was like, okay, let's just do this. Let's just have fun. I'm going to go get some players I don't have much exposure to and players that like I have been saying I'm high on, but for some reason just haven't been getting them. So guys like CeeDee Lamb, I got him pretty late. Hayden Hurst, I got him in the eighth round. I love Hayden Hurst and I think I'm one of the higher people on him. And I got Cam Newton, which I was super excited about, but I looking at where he was getting drafted in all the other divisions, I think I went a little early. I got him in the fifth round. So we'll see.
But hey, if you like the guy, you like the guy. You're not going to be, yeah, I can definitely say if you've looked at the value thing, if you go through the SFB ADP app that's you can get to from the site, there's one clear guy who reached for his guys more than anyone, and I promise you, your one Cam Newton pick is not going to trump all that. Because this is a league where guys get their guys. This is where people constantly are doing the. We've been doing this for a while now. Let's we're stand by our picks, and in this one, this is clearly a place where people do that.
Yeah, for sure. And I got Stidham super late just in case things break bad with Cam. But let's get into some news with college football, which is, you know, hopefully just a couple months away, but we'll see what actually takes place there. Some big news over the weekend. Big Ten and the Pac-12 both decided that they were going to be doing only conference games this season. And I'd like to hear from you just kind of what your initial reaction was when you heard that. And then as you've had some time to kind of, you know, mull it over, what has changed or where you kind of think this is pushing us towards?
Well, so my first thought was to text you and say that our rivalry would have to wait 1 year.
Right.
So that was priority one, let you know that you lucked out. You don't have to face Ohio State. But really, I think there's a couple of things that come into play here. Number one, I don't necessarily think this guarantees that there's a season. It's still unfortunate, but the truth is I still think spring is a possibility, and I still think that canceling the season as a whole is still on the table. Don't kill me for saying that, but it's true. But then the other thing that I really find interesting about this is the big thought is that it gives a little extra flexibility. So by only having 9 weeks, you're able to if you have to postpone a game because there's too many cases, you can postpone a game. If you have to do additional testing to find out, you can delay a game. So I think with this, the fact that they're doing this type of stuff, number one, pretty much seals the deal. If you think there's going to be any fans in the stadium this year, there aren't, because they're doing this for additional flexibility, and having fans would ruin that flexibility. And number two, it just continues the like push of no one is expecting this just disappear tomorrow. So I'm pretty happy that the Big Ten is getting ahead of it and is at least making decisions, because then they can start to plan for potential outcomes. If something goes wrong, what do we do? And yeah, I mean, we'll see how it all goes. I think I don't want to say this, but I wouldn't get my hopes up, and I'm a little concerned they really are going to try the spring season,
which would have its whole other line of potential.
No one will play.
Right. I mean, you have that problem of people like, well, if I'm getting ready for the NFL draft, I don't want to be putting myself out there this close to that. I'd rather be training for the combine or whatever it might be. Or, you know, I really do wonder if some of these like just Devy assets that we have, like the Travis Etienne's, the Chuba Hubbards, and all the receivers that
I mean,
you know, the top 10.
I wouldn't even be that. I wouldn't even be super worried about the super high picks. I would think it's if you have a guy like, for me, that guy's Olave. Like, if there's no season, or even beyond that, if even if Justin Fields doesn't play, the likelihood of Chris Olave increasing his value and becoming a late day one pick, that type of stuff goes out the window. So if you're hoping like you're right on someone, like I feel like I am right on really liking Kenneth Gainwell. But if there's no season, or if he sits out this year because he's like, well, I'm going to get drafted, but now he might be a fifth round pick who really has to fight to even get his foot in the door, versus if he went out and put up 2,000 yards this year, then maybe you're talking about a guy who sneaks into day two.
Right. No, that's, yeah, there's so many unknowns that will, yeah, that will be coming down the pike here. And it's really, really hard to even put up good guesses at this point. But what we are seeing is that, you know, and I think everyone else is going to follow suit here pretty soon, is that it's going to be a reduced schedule. And because of that, we're also, you know, we teased last time that we are going to do our picks for teams going over under the spread and all that kind of stuff. We'll be pushing that back, of course, until we actually know how many games are going to be played and what the schedules look like, because who knows. I'm also curious what this will mean for like a playoff. Like, will it be an expanded playoff? Will there not be a playoff? Like, just so many questions and very little answers, and it'll be interesting. But we did get one answer. JT Daniels has been deemed not eligible to play for this year if there is going to be football. So Georgia has some nice competition in their quarterback room. How do you think this will break down between JT Daniels and Newman?
So I think the immediate edge has to go to Jamie Newman for this year. And that's mostly just he's been with the team a little bit longer. You can't say for sure it fits better in Georgia, but he's just been with the playbook a little bit longer. He didn't come out of a year in the air raid system, which is, I'm going to just guess, pretty dramatically different from what they were planning on running this year, even with the shift in offensive mindset. But I think I mentioned it last time. I like JT Daniels a lot. If it does get pushed back to the spring, I think it was Curtis Patrick who mentioned on Twitter he thinks that would be a real opening for Daniels to get in. But I think if there is at least limited camp, if we do just try and push through within the fall, I think it's going to be Newman this year, and then Daniels takes over next year. And yeah, I mean, that's an interesting scenario. I really think Georgia was almost banking on him not getting eligibility this year.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting for sure. And something that one of the things we're going to be doing here in a little bit is just going through like our way too early top 10 for the year. And one of the things that I really noticed was the amount of teams that have turnover at the quarterback position. And in Georgia, it's going to be super interesting to see what their offense looks like going from to whomever ends up winning this competition. But, you know, as a true Seahawks fan, I do believe that competition brings about the best results. So I do think it's an overall like plus for Georgia. It's a great problem to have when you have got two really, you know, what we expect to be capable and maybe even very good quarterbacks competing to see who's going to take on the starting job. I think it's only good for their program.
For sure. So today's FFPC stat of the day is 31 players in college football last year had 10 receiving touchdowns, and it was Terrace Marshall and not Ja'Marr Chase who had the highest touchdown to reception ratio.
FFPC is home to the best fantasy football leagues and contests in the industry, including Dynasty, Best Ball, and of course, the world famous FFPC main event. To learn more or to join a league, head over to myffpc.com. That's myffpc.com. And of course, we've got a handful of tools at RotoViz designed specifically for FFPC domination. So please do check that out. I am going to say that is a crazy stat that you gave us. Of course, your boy Olave is on that list too.
I will say Olave was second. I'm going to be honest. When I was putting that in and checking out the ratio, I was really hoping Chris Olave with his 12 touchdowns on, I think he had like 46 receptions last year. It was not a lot. Was really hoping he was going to be number one, but he was second.
Yeah, I only the only reason I wasn't surprised when I saw this stat that you put together was because you guys talked about you and Travis talked about Marshall a little bit on your wide receiver U conversation on the podcast. So yeah, I'd love to hear you just talk a little bit about Marshall because he is a guy who has really been overlooked. I think a lot of people might not even know what team he plays for.
So he's the other LSU wide receiver, and it's sort of crazy to sit here and think like Justin Jefferson had an absurd amount of touchdowns last year, including the 4-touchdown game in the playoff. Yeah. Jamar Chase right now is everybody's number one wide receiver, and I honestly can't even dismiss that. He should be. But Terrace Marshall was in the same class as Jamar Chase, was a highly regarded prospect. He did get on the field as a freshman, but as everyone knows, the offense was not the same in 2018. It was definitely not the same air raid attack that it turned into in 2019. And then last year he had double digit touchdowns, and honestly he was injured for a decent amount of the year. He's the guy that last year was the third wide receiver, and now he is second behind Chase. And if Miles Brennan doesn't suck and they don't change the offense back to what it was, or I mean, it just kind of seems like he's going to be a name to know, and he might end up, I don't want to say breaking out this year, but he might just be a guy that all of a sudden kind of reminds everyone, hey, I'm really good too.
Yes. And I think we often have this, not you and I, but in the industry, people often have the debate of what does it mean to be like a number two receiver on your team? Like, is that good or bad? Because, you know, some people are like, well, you're not going to see as many targets. But then the opposite argument is, well, the defense is going to be more focused on the other receiver. So you'll probably have the, if there's any double teaming, it's going to be on Chase, not Marshall. So it really could go either way. And I think one of the big questions for this year is that Brennan question that you just brought up, like how good can he be, and what effect will Brady's leaving to go coach in the NFL, what effect will that have on the team as well? To me, this remains one of the big questions heading into the season, is just, and I don't remember if you were just trying to troll people, because let's be honest, you like trolling people.
What are you talking about? I've never trolled anyone in my life. Everything I say is 100% serious.
Exactly. So I remember you, I don't remember if you put the over under at like 6.5 on LSU wins this year, but I remember you were the beginning of the summer, you were a little bit down on what LSU could look like. Where do you think their outlook is now?
Honestly, I'm not, it hasn't changed a ton. I still think they could be awesome. Well, I don't want to like give it away, but they are listed in my way too early top 10. I still think you have to, just because they are loaded with talent. That team is going to be very much towards the top of any talent debate you have across the country. It sucks that they didn't go after JT Daniels, because if they had JT Daniels, who is this year eligible, I would have a lot of hope that they might actually be able to kind of keep it going. But I think there's still a team you have to say at the end of this year, things break right, they're in contention for the playoff. Things break wrong, maybe they're not in contention for the West after like 6 games.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think they're a team that would have a significant downgrade to their hope for a playoff if the SEC also only does conference games? Like, do you think being in such a tough conference in the SEC, if those are the only games they're playing, could really hurt their chances just because they won't get to that win total?
But I don't think anyone's going to get, I think the thing is no one's going to get to a certain win total. And when it comes to,
but if you have 2 losses out of 9 games, that's a lot worse than 2 losses out of, you know, the regular like 13, you know.
But they, I mean, if you don't put the cupcakes on a lot of people on all these schedules, you're gonna see a lot of people have records that in a normal year would be incredibly concerning. Mm-hmm. I think that you're just not gonna, like, I think that 8-1 in a vacuum is probably good enough to compete for the SEC championship if there's, I mean, if they only play conference games, so all this is super caveated by, if we go into a season, they only play conference games, the East representative is probably going to go 8-1. The West representative will probably go 9-0. Second and third place are both probably going to be on both of them. We'll probably have two losses. So if you're talking about 7-2, I mean, yeah, you're right. That doesn't look as good, but it's still kind of the same as every other year. It's the same as 10-2 while playing three cupcakes. Sure. But the thing that's going to be interesting is that you're going to see a team that we're all going to sit here all around the country and say, that's a really good team. And they're going to have a record that's 6-3. And that's just, it's going to be something that we have to kind of, it's adjusting the numbers because all of a sudden your sample size is very small. So, I mean, I can't say it'll hurt them. I think they're probably, I think we're going to see top 10 teams this year that end up with two losses. And if we only play nine games, that's a lot different than a normal year.
Right. For sure. For sure. Well, we've been doing
our NFL draft prospect series. We have been, we have been prepping that between you, me, and Travis. I think that we're the only three who have contributed to this. If Curtis has contributed, I'm sorry. I haven't seen it. But I've done two. There's a third one that's, it might be posted by the time we do this, and I'll happily talk about it. You've done one, and then I believe Travis has done two or three.
He's done at least two, maybe three. Yep.
So it's a series where not only are we looking at the guys who are right on the verge of coming out, so not just the class of 2021 guys. 2020 is in the past. We already know who the guys are. Great, grand, wonderful. But 2021, we're starting off with these Devy prospects because we're college football guys. And we're looking, like, we don't even want to just look at 2022, even 2023, the incoming freshmen. We're going beyond that. We're going all the way up to guys who are currently going into their senior year of high school who are committed to a program, because one of the best ways to enjoy college football and to enjoy Devy and enjoy the process of like getting to know these players is getting to know them early. Being able to plant your flag and say, I've got Jaxon Smith-Njigba as my number one wide receiver of the incoming freshman because he's really awesome and he scores a ton. Or even for, I don't know, a single guy committed to Oregon, so I'm just going to look at this list. Or Troy Franklin coming into Oregon.
You've heard of Troy Franklin.
I've heard his name, but I'm not going to sit here and say I can tell you much about him. Troy Franklin, he's a five-star. We got a five-star at Oregon. You know what he's going to be? He's going to be the next Julio Jones. So I think it's a fun thing for us to do because it is. Even if you're in just a dynasty league, it's a way to have an edge. Getting to know players in college football is a way to have an edge because you can understand more than just looking at their two final contributing seasons because you got to know them when they were starting.
Yeah. Oh, it's super fun. I've really enjoyed working on this. And that, like you said, you start reading about guys that are still in high school and you just start nerding out about the future and what it could look like. And of course, we all know that so many of these four-star, five-star players don't develop to what we'd hope they'd be.
Pedigree does matter.
But it does matter. And while many of them will not make it, there's going to be a lot more four and five stars and three stars that make it. So it's definitely something to dive into. I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the ones you did. Let's hear just kind of Ohio State. I'd love to listen in. I mean, I already heard a little bit on the podcast with Travis, but I'd love to hear you just explain why you were so excited about not only Ohio State, the team they're going to be putting on the field this year, but as we were talking about the future as well.
So I'm just going to throw out a few of the obvious ones because I don't want to spend too much time on the names that we've all heard. Justin Fields. Last year, he accounted for 51 touchdowns and three TDs. If you put in 50 touchdowns and three or fewer interceptions, or I'm sorry, 40 passing touchdowns and three or fewer interceptions, there's one name on that list for all time. Or I think their database only goes back to 2000, but in College Football Reference, if you go there, he is the only name on the list. Last year was insane. That was also his first year as a starting quarterback at the college level.
Nuts.
So he's insane. He's my personal 101 in all Debbie drafts. I thought it was going to be Trevor Lawrence. I don't care. I want a quarterback who can run a lot. So I know Trevor Lawrence showed us he could run in the playoffs, and I hate that guy for him, for it. But Justin Fields is Vince Young, but more accurate. Then we'll hit the big one at wide receiver for me. I was going to say it's Garrett Wilson and joke. Garrett Wilson's legit. Chris Olave, I've talked about him a lot. I think there's, if you start reading some of the like more respected film guys who do the draft, they're starting to come around on Chris Olave could be right in the conversation with Bateman and with Rondale Moore as best receiver in the Big Ten. I think my big thing that I always point out is look at who Justin Fields is throwing to when the game is on the line. It's Chris Olave. You can't sit there and like undervalue that. Like that's so important, or overvalue that. It's so important to just be the guy and have that relationship. And so last year he only had a 24% market share. So that might fall off, but truthfully, there's a lot of volume out there. He's going to get it.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of vacated targets. I don't think people realize that.
I mean, they lost three guys who at the beginning of the year were projected as starters. Benjamin Victor, KJ Hill, and Austin Mack were the three guys listed as starters. And Chris Olave was the guy that by year's end was the starter. So, so then here are the names that are kind of on the upcoming. Garrett Wilson, he's still a pretty big name. Everyone kind of knows him. He is a true sophomore. He made a whole bunch of ridiculous catches last year, and he made probably the most ridiculous catch of the playoff. Pretty much all you have to sit here and say is he's going to be very good. He was one of the highest ranked receivers to ever commit to the program. Jeremy Ruckert is a name that doesn't really get talked about a whole lot because he's an Ohio State tight end, and Ohio State doesn't use their tight end enough. They don't throw to him. Jeremy Ruckert had a very important catch in the comeback win against Wisconsin. He was, I think, the number two tight end in his high school class. He was considered to be probably the best receiving tight end in his class. I don't necessarily know if he's going to get the volume to get in the conversation with Brevin Jordan and with Kyle Pitts next year. Those are the two big tight ends coming out. But he's kind of a freak athlete. I would expect he's planning on declaring after this year. And I do think that he'll have an opportunity to increase his draft stock realistically, if he got like five touchdowns, he's going to do it in a spectacular fashion. Beyond that, it's really about the youth that Ohio State has, and it's the big four incoming receivers. And that's Julian Fleming, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Gee Scott Jr., and Mookie Cooper. Everyone loves Julian Fleming. He's projected as like the next Julio Jones. He's the freak athlete that everyone loves. I'm a Smith and Jigba guy because he had 2,000 yards receiving, 34 touchdowns as a senior, and he also added in some rushing work. That's insane.
That is insane. I like G. Scott Jr. only because his father does a lot of radio work up in Seattle, so I used to hear him on the radio all the time, and he would talk about his kid being playing football. And so I just feel like I've already known about him for a couple of years. And so I really hope that he has a lot of success.
And he's a good guy, does a lot of stuff for his community. The last guys I just want to quickly touch on, because, you know, I could talk about them all day. CJ Stroud and Jack Miller. Last year, Ohio State signed two top quarterbacks, both four stars. Both of them at one point were fringe five stars. Stroud ended up pushing to be a five star. One of those two guys is going to earn the backup role this season, and one of them will likely be the starter going in next year. Stroud is the initial favorite for that because he passed for almost 4,000 yards last year as a senior and 47 touchdowns, and he was the Elite 11 MVP, which I don't know if they used the same criteria for the Elite 11 last year that they did this year, which is a weird breakdown where it's 75% film.
Yeah.
And not anything to do with the system, but I don't know. But CJ Stroud is a guy that has a lot of upsides, but so does Jack Miller. People are kind of liken him to a Ben Roethlisberger type quarterback. One of those guys is going to become the starter, and that guy, if Ryan Day keeps up his trend, that guy is going to be a first round quarterback. And yeah. there's a lot of value in that. And the other guy's probably going to transfer to somewhere, and he's probably going to be really talented. So both are names to watch, because one's going to be the starter for the best program in the country, and the other guy's going to be a starter somewhere.
Oh, I thought you meant the other guy's going to be starting at Ohio State.
No, the other guy, the other guy. I think it'll be CJ Stroud gets the start, because Ryan Day seems very high on him. And I think Jack Miller will eventually transfer. And there's a good chance he transfers to a program like
Oklahoma.
I don't think it'll be that high. I mean, he might be the next guy that goes down to the Bayou and takes over LSU, or it might go smaller than that. He might be like the guy that takes over a Cincinnati level program or a Memphis. But they're really talented. So
yeah,
it's hard to say with a transfer.
You didn't really talk about J.K. Dobbins' replacement.
It's because there's like six of them. So there's Trey Sermon, who I in the past I've expressed I'm not a huge fan of as a player. I think he's going to be fine. I think there's a chance he's a day two player, because he has size and speed, but he's also coming off a fairly significant knee injury. It's not the ACL injury that we all kind of thought it was. I think it was LCL, but I think he's going to be very good. If Ohio State keeps doing what they've been doing, he'll probably get pretty close to 1,000 yards this year. I love Master Teague. I really wish he was healthy. I think he has a torn Achilles, and they're just not saying anything because Ohio State doesn't talk about injuries. But at a minimum, I would guess he has a partially torn Achilles. So the chances of him being super successful at Ohio State are probably not there, which is sad, because the guy was over 200 pounds and had a timed 4.340 in high school. He's insane, and I wanted him to be there. He had straight line speed for days. And then the third guy that I am interested in is Marcus Crowley. He was really kind of getting that third running back work. He was going in all the blowouts. He was in mop-up duty a lot last year. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Florida during his senior year of high school. And the staff loves him. They felt like when they signed him, he was a gem, and they found this secret dude. And then he tore his ACL in November. So he just might – it seems like him and Teague are coming in not at 100%, and if – it seems like Teague might be in a little worse case, so Crowley might be the backup. But I don't know. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, because whoever is the starting running back for Ohio State is going to do well.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I just wanted you to take a second to talk about it. We're going to be right back after this quick break. We'll talk about some of the Pac-12 articles that we wrote.
Welcome into RotoViz Radio. I'm Dave Cabin, host of the RotoViz Fantasy Football Podcast. I wanted to take a moment to thank you for supporting RotoViz Radio. We love producing these shows, and we hope that you love listening to them. As a thank you, loyal podcast listeners can get 10% off of a one-year RotoViz subscription by using the promo code 2020RVRadio at checkout. We have some of the very best tools, articles, and analysts in the business, and can't wait to lead you on the path to greatness. If you haven't done so yet, do us a favor and take a minute to rate and review this podcast. Thanks again for listening. Now let's get into the show.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. And there's no better place to start than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Get in on the action for this week's big UFC fight, or check out odds on NASCAR, Formula One, and the Premier League. Can't wait for your team to come back? BetOnline has futures odds, including win totals, division winners, and even league championships. Or check out daily simulations of Madden and NBA 2K to watch and wager on. Visit betonline.ag and use the promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. I know that I will be getting on there a little bit later today to put some bets down on the Seattle Sounders, who kick off their MLS. This new, have you seen what they're doing in the MLS with like their World Cup style tournament? Yeah, I'm really excited about it. Seattle plays early tomorrow morning.
I'm a season ticket holder for a team.
Oh, that's true. Of course you do. You are.
My team got killed. My team lost 4-0. It was great.
Yeah. So I'm going to put a little bit of cash on the Seattle Sounders myself. I'm not telling anyone else to do that, but I will be. So I'm excited for that. I'm pretty sure that yesterday would have been the Euro finals had we not had to cancel the Euro soccer championships. And it was a little bit hard for me because I fully believe that my country, the Netherlands, would have been representing me and my country very well, and we would have been winning, hoisting the trophies first time since 1988. alas, it wasn't meant to be. But let's get back into football. Talk to me a little bit about USC. To me, they remain a team. Like every year, I don't really, well, lately, I don't have much faith in them. And I know we were even kind of making fun of USC for their kind of poor recruiting last year, but they seem to be doing a really good job right now getting ready for 2021. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on USC, what you kind of discovered, and should I be, as an Oregon fan, should I be nervous about what USC is going to be bringing out to the football field this season?
I mean, they're coming off one of their worst recruiting classes of all time. So I won't sit here and, like, if you're a USC fan, don't sit here and think, it's going to be awesome. We're going to be the best ever. You're probably still in a downswing as long as you have Clay Helton. So hopefully he's gone. As an Oregon fan, I mean, I wasn't a Slovis believer last year. I think I poo-pooed him a lot. I think I was telling everyone I was a big JT Daniels guy, and I thought Daniels would have been even better. But 72% completion percentage, over 3,500 yards, and an AYA over 9.43. That's really impressive. And the fact that they jumped up over 6 points per game and almost and over one half of a yard per play, those are, I mean, they're substantial increases. So it's hard to really knock them. They went all in on this air raid. They got Graham Harrell, and I mean, they really went all in on this air raid attack. So Slovis is the guy. I think you could probably make a case he's quarterback two in his class, in the class of 2022, behind Sam Howell. You could even, I mean, you're not as high on Sam Howell as I am. You might have him as QB one. But beyond that, for that team, it's Slovis, it's receivers, and then it's a garbage room full of running backs. For me, I'm an Amon-Ra St. Brown guy. Ever since he as a freshman, he had 750 yards. Followed that up the next year with over 1,000 yards. And that was really during Michael Pittman's breakout season, where Pittman had, I think he had like 12 or somewhere between 12 and 1,400 yards. And Amon-Ra St. Brown still found a way to be the consistent guy for Slovis. And with Michael Pittman out the door, and really, like, that was a huge chunk of their yardage, you're looking at him sitting in this potential now where he could be looking at this dominant final year that we kind of look for, the huge year with like the 40% market share of yards. If he does something like that, I really think he's going to be in that conversation with all of the top guys, and he could be in that first round conversation. Now, at the same time, we said the exact same thing about his brother, Equanimeous St. Brown, who ended up being a seventh-round pick. So, fingers crossed that playing at USC with an air raid attack gets you a better draft capital than playing with Notre Dame. So, but that's the big name. For beyond that, I think you've got a few interesting names. Tyler Vaughn's, if he wasn't 1,000 years old and he wasn't going into his fifth year, I really might say that he's got the look of that's exactly the same as Michael Pittman. He's been a producer for 3 years, had over 20% of market share for three consecutive years. There's a chance that he just is that safety net guy. I just can't ever see him becoming a day two draft capital. So not really a name to watch because the advanced age, because just doesn't appear to be special, at least not in the eyes of the NFL guys. One guy that I am really interested in that I really do like is it's probably time to try and trade for Brew McCoy. He was definitely taken in Devy drafts as a freshman because he was the number one overall athlete and he was the ninth overall player in his class. And he has kind of a weird story because way late in the process, he decided to flip to Texas from USC. And it was great. He was joining Texas. He was going to go be their guy. And it was like a month on campus, he decided he was homesick and transferred back to USC. And I actually forgot, he actually got out of his letter of intent to join Texas. So crazy story. And I think because of the fact that he's now been out of sight, out of mind, no one can think about him because he has to sit out a year. Everyone has forgotten that he was such an elite athlete. So he's a guy to watch because there is kind of no third receiver on that team right now, because mm-hmm. one of the guys they were looking at was Kyle Ford, was kind of expected to make that jump because he was a high four-star prospect. And if Vaughn is really just a 20% share guy, there's still a lot of volume out there. And Brew McCoy is maybe the highest upside guy. So if you're in a Devy draft, he's the guy to go fire a low ball offer on and see if the owner just is sick of staring at him. Yeah. And then their running back room, we mentioned it always sucks. Steven Carr is the name everyone wants to blow up because he was a super duper high player. He was a top 20 overall player in his class. I think he's done. His injuries are just too bad. He's going into his fourth year, has really not done a whole lot since he's been there. The one guy I really, really am interested in is this guy, Keenan Christen. He was third most carries on the team with 68, turned into 373 yards and two touchdowns. The only reason why I like him is, one, he's going to be basically available to let sit there on the outside. You don't have to try and draft him. But you can just know about him early. But he ran a 10.58 100 meter dash, and he's also part of the USC track team. Speed. If he's getting, yes. if he's definitely undersized. He's not going to be this dude that's going to be a workhorse, but he is a guy that, you know, maybe a team wants some speed on their roster, and he's the guy that finds a spot.
And what about their, I know you said their 2020 class was pretty brutal. How's their 2021 class looking as far as recruiting? I know that they were, last I looked, they were pretty high up there, but I have to be honest, I haven't read your article yet because I was out of town.
Sure.
I was in the mountains with no service at all. But I have seen them pretty high on the kind of like the composite rankings, but I actually don't know if that's like, it could be defensive linemen for all I know, that doesn't really contribute to like fantasy football. So well, then I'd love to hear
you don't
thoughts.
Know. You don't know California, because California is talent. No,
but so they're all going to Oregon, baby.
It's funny because I don't actually think a lot of these guys are all from California. They've actually done a nice job. They ranked 55th overall last year in the recruiting class, which was worth making fun of them for. And this year, right now, they sit at sixth. So Jake Garcia is a four-star commit, and Miller Moss is a four-star commit. Miller Moss, at least at one point, was considering reclassifying and joining the team this year. And I would say as we get closer and closer to fall, if it looks like there won't be high school football, I would kind of expect for him to be a guy that does reclassify and joins a team, or at least tries to graduate early. So he's a really interesting name, and I think he did very well at the Elite 11. They have a few names. They've got three wide receiver commits, Quadre Davis out of Dallas, Kalen Bullock, and Michael Jackson. And then I think the guy that, if you're holding out hope that USC is going to have a running back again that is very meaningful, it is this kid, Brandon Campbell. During his 2019 season, he had 22 total touchdowns, and he has actually been tested at a sub 4.640, which while 4.6 isn't great, it's nice to see them at a point where you're going to get stronger. You're probably going to get faster when you get to college. And so the fact that he is already sub 4.6, there's definitely some interesting spots there. So he's a guy worth watching.
Nice. Yeah, that's good. USC, they're like, it's kind of like how Michigan is for you. Like, you don't ever want them to be good, but college football is actually better when they are. That's how I feel about USC. Like, I love when Oregon just destroys them, but it's better for college football when USC is relevant. So it's good hearing that, you know, while it might be a little bit of a, well, I don't know, man, Slovis.
They're going to be able to score points. At a minimum, they're going to go out there and put up like 30 points a game.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
For sure. And in the Pac-12, you know, it's not like they're going up against elite teams every week. But speaking of elite teams from the Pac-12, how'd you like that transition? I wrote up.
Wait, is it time to talk about Arizona State now?
Oregon Ducks. I thought it was really interesting just doing a little bit of, you know, deeper digging on the team itself. Like, for example, I had no idea that the Ducks had not had a wide receiver drafted in the first round in like four decades. Absolutely crazy. I wasn't surprised when you guys didn't talk about the Ducks on your Wide Receiver U podcast, because they just have not been producing much in the NFL. So I was looking kind of at the Ducks and what to expect for, you know, this upcoming year and beyond. And one of the things that I really came away with is we've talked a little bit about Anthony Brown transferring in from Boston College, and he's going to be competing with Tyler Shuck, who was the backup to Justin Herbert last year. And as I was looking into the team a little bit more, I actually would not be surprised if Shuck wins the quarterback competition and just has an incredible year. He has the tools to really be an effective quarterback in this offense. I think a lot of people think about Oregon, and I talk about this all the time, as like this high-flying air raid type offense because it's spread, but it's a spread offense that does most of its damage on the ground, or at least that's what they want to do. They want to run the football. They don't want to necessarily just do this whole air raid style. So it's a spread, run first.
It's the power kind spread.
And then they do a lot of the RPO stuff, and I think it will really play to Tyler Shuck's strengths. So I think Shuck's in a good position to succeed for this year, and then maybe, you know, because he's only a sophomore, maybe he's able to stick around for a while. But the quarterback room is pretty deep, as they are bringing in 2 4-star recruits in Jay Butterfield and Robbie Ashford. Both of those guys were 4-star guys who were, you know, top 10. Well, Ashford was a 13th dual threat guy, and Butterfield was a 5th ranked pro style quarterback. So both of them have some expectation going in with them. So I'm hoping something can happen there. Obviously the one name everyone knows for like Devy purposes when it comes to Oregon is CJ Verdell, but even he has really been, I think, pushed down because of the lack of draft capital that Oregon running backs have received, and the ones that have received decent draft capital haven't really produced. So I think people are very skeptical on CJ Verdell, whereas I am excited about him. I think he could be really, really productive in the NFL if given the opportunity. And I think this year he's just going to have another monster year. He has had over 1,000 rushing yards in back-to-back years. And that's despite the fact that he is not getting a ton of carries. And part of that is not because of talent, but just design. Like the Oregon offense, because it is pretty fast paced, they sub in a lot of running backs. So you got 3 or 4 guys going in and out every game. Like Travis Dye saw a lot of work. Cyrus Habililiku saw some work as well. So these guys are all coming in and contributing a lot. So I think Verdell is someone who I'm putting trade offers out for, because I think he is going to have a very good season. I think he is going to be highly productive. And I think he's, you know, I don't think he's going to have super high draft capital, because, again, this is going to be a pretty deep running back class, just like we saw this year.
You think it's going to be deep?
Well, top heavy. But I think
there's like 3 or 4 awesome guys. I would actually, my argument to that is I think Verdell may get the bump just because if there is a team that's a little bit running back desperate, I think we're looking at a class where you're going to get 2 or 3 guys that do earn that day 2 draft capital that aren't actually normal day 2 guys. It's sort of why you can't discount Sermon earlier, because there are so few. But I honestly think you might be underselling where Verdell's potential might be, because he could be the 5th running back in this class, because this class is gross.
Okay.
Not to undercut you.
No. It's good. I think us having disagreements is good for our listeners. I think my thoughts are, we're talking about this class before we've had the season, so that always makes the class look a little bit worse, because a lot of the guys that are going to pop haven't had the opportunity to yet. I mean, Journey Brown, if he gets the opportunity at Penn State, if he takes over the workload and puts up numbers like, you know, Sanders and Barkley did before him, like, he's going to jump up draft boards. You know, like, we just don't know what's going to happen yet this year. I think about a guy like Kennedy Brooks, having more of an opportunity to be the lead back in Oklahoma. So I think there's names that are going to pop. Whereas CJ Verdell, I think he's already kind of hit his production. Like, I think he's going to get another 1,000 yards this year. I think he's going to have another good year, like I was saying, but I don't think it's going to be that much different than what it was last year or the year before, because his role in the offense is going to remain the same because of the design of the offense. So I think because there are, and what I meant by deep, I mean, I think you have 2 elite running backs in Hubbard and Etienne, and then the rest are all kind of a composite. Yeah. Like, you were talking about Gainwell. We're talking about, you know, Kylan Hill. All these guys are kind of any one of them could make
your guy Kylan Hill under the bus.
Man, I love Kylan Hill though. Like any one of them could make that jump and become that next tier. And I think maybe what we need to do soon is actually just sit down and talk about that second tier of running backs, maybe have Travis on the show as well, and we can break it down. And you two can just tell me why I'm wrong, because I think he agrees with you on this. And I think it could be really interesting. Anyway, all that to say, CJ Verdell is a name to definitely, I think, be... No. What? No, what?
I said he's a guy to know.
Oh, yes. And I think someone to put a couple of feelers out and try to get him in a trade. Wide receivers, as we mentioned, has been pretty bleak for the Ducks, but I am excited about the future. Micah Pittman, who's Michael Pittman's little brother, who you mentioned earlier. Micah Pittman is a sophomore. He had a pretty disappointing year due mainly to injuries, but he is a former four-star guy, highly recruited, highly touted, and I think could really make the jump if there's a decent quarterback throwing him the football. So he's a name that I think he could be a guy with decent draft capital. Probably not first round. I don't think he'll be the guy that breaks it, but I could see him as a future day two type guy. The receiver that led the Ducks in receiving is Johnny Johnson III. I don't really think he projects to be much more than a role playing type, like wide receiver three type guy in the NFL, like not in dynasty, but on a football team. Like I could see him like ending up in the Patriots as their like third or fourth wide receiver. He doesn't have near the ceiling that a lot of these other guys do. But they do have a lot of second-year players at the position with a lot of recruiting pedigree as well as opportunity because although, you know, none of these wide receivers have been drafted out of Oregon, a lot of them have been leaving. So you've got great opportunities for guys like J.R. Waters. Josh Delgado is a guy I like a lot. And then Lance Wilhoit. Devin Williams is another dude. He's a junior, though, who could have an opportunity to shine. So all that to say, the wide receiver room is pretty full, but not exactly with super high-end talent. But when we look at like what's coming down the pike, the 2021 recruiting class is like already like top five, and it's getting better and better. And most of it is on the office and offensive side of the football. They've brought in four-star offensive linemen. They brought in 2 4-star tight ends. A bunch of wide receivers, including who we talked about earlier, Troy Franklin, who is a 5-star recruit out of California, and the sky is a limit for him. They were actually talking to him. This is where I actually was reading about the first round thing. They were talking to Troy about it, and they're like, man, why are you going to school that doesn't produce wide receiver talent in the NFL? He said, well, that's all going to change with me. I'm excited to be the first wide receiver from Oregon to be taken in the first round in a couple of years. So I really like him. But the guy I'm most excited about is Ty Thompson. You mentioned the Elite 11 earlier. He was like ranked like the MVP, like rated the MVP from that 2 weekends ago. So Ty Thompson out of Arizona, he is currently a 4-star guy, but after that performance, every single site like 247 and all the other guys were saying we're moving him up because he's just catching everyone's attention and he's just been balling out and people are really excited about him. So Ty Thompson's a name I'm definitely circling and excited about for the future for the quarterback position in Oregon. It'll be interesting to see, like if Shuck does win the job, if Shuck gets to keep going until he's a senior, then Thompson has to wait a little while, or if they just hand the reins over. So we'll see. But I'm really excited about the future for Oregon. They look really, really strong. And yeah, I think Cristobal is doing a great job putting that offense together, really focusing on protecting the quarterback, running the football. And I think it's going to eventually lead to some kind of exciting fantasy football options from the University of Oregon, which is not something that we've really been able to say all that much outside of like LeGarrette Blount, and he was never all that exciting. So that's Oregon.
I think the one name you didn't mention that I am hoping for a lot from is Sean Dollars.
Oh yes, now, the running back.
This is me being incredibly selfish because I have him on a campus campus to Canton league. He was the number 2 all-purpose back behind Wandale Robinson last year. I just think that matters. And if you guys find a creative way to use him, he's an interesting player. But with that being said, I don't have my hopes very high for him, but I'm fingers crossed that he could be good.
Well, I did write about him in the article a little bit. I was just trying to stop talking. but I am excited for Dollars, not for this upcoming year, but the following year, because they don't really have highly recruited running backs outside of him. They brought in a guy named Seven McGee from California, but he's more of an all-purpose back, more of like a wide receiver, slot receiver type guy, more than an actual true running back. So I think Dollars is actually going to have an opportunity to cash it in, if you will.
For sure.
So yeah. Arizona State, my man.
So Arizona State's really fun. And I'm actually going to push one guy to the end that everyone kind of cares about. I'll just push Daniels to the end because I want to spend a little bit of time ranting. So we'll get to running back first. So your guy, Eno Benjamin.
I don't know who you're talking about.
So it's this running back. He's small. You thought he was
seventh round.
You thought he was going to be a third round pick, and I kept telling you he's not going to be a third round pick.
I thought he'd be a fourth round pick. I hoped he would be a fourth round.
Yeah,
pick.
Yeah. But here's what's fun. He had every single one of their running back touchdowns last year, running the ball. He had 90% of their yards, and he had 83% of their carries. And guess what? They don't have a lot of people who returned. So he's gone. AJ Carter decided to transfer, and this guy, Demetrius Flowers, last year carried the ball 11 times. So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to be fun, and they're going to use true freshmen. So the number one guy that you should sort of expect to see this year is this guy, Diamante Trainum. He's out of from Akron, Ohio, from Archbishop Hoban. He had 1,300 yards and 26 touchdowns as a junior. He was pretty injured as a senior, but he was a really, really productive back as a junior, and he was actually a two-way player. So just an interesting guy. Ohio State was way in on him early on, kind of missed out because they were pushing for another guy. They actually had two silent commitments, and that's when Trainum decided to go to Arizona State rather than staying with Ohio State. But the other interesting name is Danielle. It sounds weird, but he has a weird Y thrown in the middle of the name Daniel. So Daniel Nagata, he's an all-purpose back. Over his high school career, he had over 2,400 rushing yards and over 1,200 receiving yards and 47 total touchdowns. And he also was used in a return role. I think that between the two of them, one of them is going to pop as awesome. If I were to put my money down early, I would guess Trainum because he's a little more the traditional back profile. But Eno Benjamin was a little bit of that mix and match versatile player as well. Yeah. And that might scheme a little bit better for Nagata. So both of them are guys to watch. I think if you're in standard size Devy drafts where there's only about four rounds worth of players, one of them might go, but you actually might be able to completely just sit and wait and see who pops the next year. And neither one's probably going to jump up and be the guy you have to take in the first round next year, but they're both really interesting. The receiver room kind of sucks, but I've kind of thought that for the past few years, because Nikhil Harry was good, but they've put a first round talent in the NFL two consecutive years. And Ayuk was not considered a first round talent at the beginning of last year. So you kind of can't write anyone off. They have one redshirt freshman or redshirt senior player who appears to be next in line for high volume. And that guy's name is Frank Darby. Don't draft him. Don't think that me saying his name means that he's going to be a first round player. He's not. But he might be a really productive player. So if you're in like a college league, he's a guy worth watching, worth drafting early, because he should be kind of in that same volume range as Ayuk. And he might be a name that over the course of next year you start hearing. So just when it's time for the end of the year to come around and people are saying, oh, well, this Frank Darby guy is a first round player, don't be shocked, because he might be that guy. Beyond that, they went ballistic with their wide receiver recruiting in 2020. So they had four commitments last year alone. The first guy, Johnny Wilson, he was the number 115 overall player. Elijah Badger was 139 overall. LV Bunkley Shelton, it was 157th overall. And this guy, Chad Johnson Jr., son of the all-pro wide receiver, he was 365 overall. Because they have actually had so much success producing talent, and Herm Edwards has proven that he can put a receiver in the first round, I don't want to discount any of these names. I don't know which one of them is going to be the guy. If I were to put money down right now, I would guess Wilson. He's a 6'6" guy, runs a sub 4.6 40.
That's not bad.
No, that's kind of the thing you're looking for. Since he's the highest pedigree, there's a decent chance he's going to be the first one to get on the field. And like I said, 6'6", that's unique. So he's the guy worth watching from this squad. But all of that is just because of this one dude under center, Jaden Daniels. If you have any concerns about him, it's that he's a little bit slim. You wish he was 200 and something pounds, but right now he's probably like 180. But for a guy who is awfully skinny, he sure does run the ball pretty effectively. So last year he had 355 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns. His senior year of high school, he had over 1,500 yards rushing and 16 touchdowns. This guy is a dual threat quarterback that is going to be really, really fun. I personally right now have him as my number two quarterback in the class of, actually, I don't think I have it in the rankings that are currently posted, but in the ones that aren't posted yet that are going up, hopefully soon. Jaden Daniels is my.
If only someone could get their rankings put out there.
You aren't the only one. Our fearless Devi leader does not have his finished yet either. So you are not the only one. But in our secret, super duper secret rankings that are coming out soon, Jaden Daniels is my QB2 in the class of 2022. There's a reason I went after him in my Devi draft. I think that mix of passing and receiving is really good. So here are a few stats that I like. His adjusted yards per attempt last year was 9.45. Just to put this out there, we look for a 7 is right. Kind of our threshold for good. So 9.45 is really good. If this was 2008, we would be gushing over a 9.45 as, oh my gosh, how can a player even do that? But because it's 2020 and now everyone is awesome at QB efficiency, that was only 12th best in the country last year. But he had 17 touchdowns to only 2 interceptions. Like I said, you know, Benjamin was kind of the center of the offense, but now Benjamin's gone. That means this is Daniel's offense. And I mean, like I mentioned, his high school rushing, you'd think a guy who rushed for 1,500 yards, maybe he wasn't as productive through the air. Maybe they were such a run heavy team. Nope, he had 4,500 yards passing on a 70% completion percentage, and he passed for 60 touchdowns. Not fluky, because the year before he threw for 62 touchdowns and threw for over 5,000 yards. This guy is really, really, really good. So I would say if you are sitting there and you're in a Devi auction and you're not the highest budget guy. So I can say this, the not highest budget guys in our draft basically quit when they realized they weren't going to get the super top guys. Don't quit. Pivot. You can't get Sam Howell. You can't get Keaton Slovis. Look for Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels is incredibly talented, and that team is putting a lot of faith in him because they're going to try and run their offense through the passing game a little bit more this year, and they might rely on his legs a little bit more than they did because he doesn't have that safety net running back that he had with Eno Benjamin. So this is a guy whose stock is probably going to go up. So sure. Get him now before all of a sudden he's double the price next year. And as for the recruits,
I was going to just ask you about Jaden real quick. Who would you say has the best defense in the Pac-12? Roughly a couple of the best defenses in the Pac-12.
Oregon.
Yeah, this is what he did. So this is how I know who Jaden was. Last year against Oregon, he threw for over 400 yards with 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. Like, the dude can ball. Like, he is an incredible, incredible quarterback. I mean, last year he only threw 2 interceptions on the season. Like, I just wanted people to know, you're not the only one saying this. Like, the guy can play, and just because you haven't heard about him yet, maybe, doesn't mean that that you shouldn't, because like you said, his stock is on the rise. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if he overtakes Trey Lance by the end of the year.
I mean, you think Lance is probably going out this year?
Sure. I just mean as far as in our rankings.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I think he has a ceiling unlike the rest. I think his ceiling might be higher than Howell's just because of the running. Yeah. His ceiling to me is definitely higher than Slovis. I apples to apples. One was a high 4-star and one was a mediocre 3-star. Slovis was 3-star. Daniels was one of the top 4-stars. I will say that I trust certain recruiting guys and that what they see. Barton Simmons, Jaden Daniels is his guy. His guy over Howell, his guy over Slovis, his guy like right up there. Now maybe I'm biased to Barton Simmons because he had Justin Fields as the number one quarterback in his class.
But he was right on that.
I mean, Fields turned it quick. So, I mean, if he is right and Jaden Daniels is the top guy in this class, right now you can get him at the price of third most expensive in this class. And like you said, Trey Lance is sitting out there probably in a lot of Devy depleted drafts. He might be the fourth most expensive. Heck, he might even be the fifth most because I forgot about Spencer Rattler.
Yeah.
So that I think he's a really high ceiling guy and I think you should get to know him. Their recruiting class sucks right now, so I don't really want to spend a lot of time with it. There's not a single name worth knowing. Don't try and reach for him next year. Unless they turn it around, which they probably will. Herm Edwards has been a good recruiter through this process so far. But right now, don't draft Finn Collins. Don't draft Cameron Beecham.
Okay. as far as Jaden goes, though, I think you mentioning the receivers that they've already been able to bring in, those are the guys that he's going to be throwing to. So as far as for his stock, it shouldn't hurt much.
Oh, his talent that that receiving room. Yeah, they're bringing like Frank Darby might lead this year. By next year, they're going to have a sophomore heavy room, and that sophomore heavy room is going to be the most talented receiver room that Arizona State has ever had.
Yeah. So the future is it's not too bad.
No.
It's not too bad on Arizona State. So that is a good thing. I think we are already over an hour. We're up at an hour 10. I think we should, because I am going on a very long camping trip in about 2 weeks. So instead of doing the way too early top 10 this week, why don't we do an episode next week where we focus on that, since I'll be out the week after? How does that sound?
That's good. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So we will push that to next week. So that was a tease leading you to, you know, have to come back for another episode. But it was a good time talking a little bit about these prospects, talking a little bit about what the landscape might look like for the season. Of course, we will get more information. And as we do, we will continue to break it down. Any parting words of knowledge from you, Mr. Wispay?
Bye, Chris Olave.
Indeed. Thank you again for listening. I want to thank our sponsors, Blue Wire, FFPC, and Bet Online. And of course, don't forget to go get that 10% RotoViz discount, as you heard mentioned earlier in the episode. Thanks again for listening. We will be back with you next week with our way too early top 10.
The wait is finally over. Knotfest Roadshow is back. October 13th, Jiffy Lube Live. Featuring Slipknot. With Killswitch Engage, Fever 333, and Code Orange. Tickets on sale now at LiveNation.com. Part of the Mattress Warehouse Concert Series.